Scylla and Rise mix traditional Inuit throat singing with beats reminiscent of the New York house scene. Cynthia Pitsilak and Charlotte Kamanique began collaborating with DJ Rise Ashen for the Museum of Nature's Nature Nocturne back in 2015. Since then, they've gone on to great success, including a Juno nomination in 2017 for their first album debut. Most recently, they walked away from the Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Awards with 2 nominations and 2 wins under their belt. Today, I'm joined by Rise Ashen, the man behind the beats. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm sorry that Scylla wasn't available, but hopefully you can catch us, you know, in some other medium.
You're just coming off of 2 wins at the first ever Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Awards, including Inuit Artist Group of the Year. How does that feel?
Oh, it's wonderful, and I mean, we're huge fans of the festival. We've been going there for, I mean, I've been going for 15 years. It's a beautiful, beautiful powwow, and it's just a wonderful chance for everybody to just get together, you know, guests from all around, from different Indigenous nations that are representing their culture. And it's a great chance for everybody. I mean, you know, anyone who's interested in culture to go out there and just soak some of this in. The dance, the dance contest is wonderful. They always have amazing musical groups playing. And then there's also a whole bunch of Indigenous vendors that are there selling their wares. So it's a great chance to support the local Indigenous community and to, you know, to immerse yourself in Indigenous culture. It's not something that is easy to do. You know, mainstream media, it's you know, now in the last 10 years, there's been more attention paid to it. But, you know, it's kind of hard to find. So it's an amazing opportunity for you right in Ottawa to come out, support, and enjoy some incredible culture.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no secret that a lot of people's plans changed back in March 2020. How were you initially affected, and how have you spent the past 15 months?
Well, I mean, I've always, you know, I've had a good handle on the technology in terms of the studio stuff. So, you know, I had a green screen and, you know, 10 lights and, you know, 5 cameras and all that for years from producing videos and all that. So we were able to shift to producing shows online quite easily. But yeah, it's kind of interesting for me. I feel like it was a very tricky step for a lot of bands, and I think, you know, the desire to get out there has to be moderated with a good understanding and some humility about your capacity in terms of what you're able to produce, because this stuff doesn't go away. So, you know, like when it was first starting, everyone was like, yeah, do a live broadcast. And then we started watching some of these live broadcasts and we're going, oh my God, I feel so bad for this artist. And it's just, it's awful, you know, because like you want to work, you want to do it, but if you're not properly set up, it can really, you know, it just looks bad, you know. So it's very difficult for a lot of artists. But for us, I mean, I think we were, you know, when we were allowed to get together, you know, Charlotte would just come over here and we'd set up the green screen and we would film stuff. And because I have the studio all ready to go, so we were able to get some pretty good sounding stuff. And, you know, we had some interesting backgrounds that we're using. So, you know, we were able to produce a lot of shows, but obviously it's nothing like performing live for your audience. Yeah, so a big part of what we do with the band is the improvisational aspect. And so, you know, the songs, I mean, some of our songs, you know, like, you know, they'll be at 80 BPM on the album, but then we can play them up to 150 BPM live. So there's a huge variation in terms of what the vibe is like in the concert. And we really feed off the audience and it's different every time. So that was something that, you know, that's something that's been completely absent from, you know, we played the Blues Fest last year for a whole bunch of cars. And then we played the anniversary of the Indigenous Theater at the NAC last year as well, which was nice. So we got to play for, I think it was about 35 or 40 people in the audience. So it's really special for musicians to play, you know, in front of a live audience. It's a huge part of what we do, you know. So
yeah, it's funny, that was actually a question that was coming up. You just said that you the live audience is a huge part of what you do, especially as a group that combines Inuit throat singing with electronic beats. You have done a couple of drive-in shows and a bunch of virtual shows. How does that energy change when you're doing something remotely or separated from your audience?
Oh, it's night and day. I mean, we love playing together and we really enjoy what we do. And so it's wonderful to get together regardless. I mean, we love jamming in the studio here. I have a basement studio. And so, you know, anytime we come over, it's just always a lot of fun, and we really jam and we just have a good time. But, you know, to do that with people is just, it's a whole other level, because you're communicating with them. They're communicating with you. You're feeding off their energy. And like I was saying, the songs can end up dramatically different. I mean, we have, you know, some memories of festivals that we've played, you know, where it was just, the vibe was so lit. It's so crazy. And everybody was just going berserk, and the energy comes through you. You can literally feel the energy coming through you, and it just creates this, it's almost like we're watching the show happen, you know, in that flow state. And it's just this, you're in this zone. It's this meditative trance that we get into, and people are dancing. It's just such a beautiful vibe. So, I mean, it's totally different, but, you know, that said, we're really grateful that we've had some presenters that have, you know, put a lot of faith in us and commissioned us to do these presentations. And so we feel really, really blessed that we've been able to do so many shows in the last year.
Recently, you brought in Charlotte Carlton as a new member. How did that idea come about? And what was the process of integrating her into the group like?
So Charlotte Hamanik and Cynthia Pitulak are the original members of the band Sila. And so, you know, they've been working together for about 15 years. And when Cynthia also produces an Inuit TV show for children. It's actually the only children's show that's all in Inuktitut. And so she had an opportunity to move up north. And so she took it. So she's been living in Iqaluit. And Charlotte Carlton was living here. Charlotte had sung before for, you know, a whole bunch of different shows that they had worked on together. And so it was just an easy transition to bring her in. She started jamming with us, and it just worked so well. I mean, she's an incredible singer, and real freestyle, like, you know, real bold energy that she brings to it. And Charlotte and Charlotte love singing together. So it was very natural. And we played a few shows. We played Blues Fest with her last year after we'd only practiced together four or five times, and she knocks it out of the park. Like, her energy is just absolutely nuts. So after about a month or so, Charlotte and Cynthia invited her to be an official part of Sila. So she was thrilled, and she's been a fan of the band since we started. So, you know, we used to see her dancing at the shows. Now she's making everybody dance at the shows. She's awesome. Great energy.
That's really cool. I like that she used to just be in the crowd, and now she's up there now. That's really funny. You've called your first album debut a skeleton of the band's sound, and you pushed it further with Galactic Gala. Do you feel like that sound is still developing, or did you really find your groove with Galactic Gala?
No, it's definitely evolving. I mean, you know, and when we first started the band, it was really just an experiment. And it was an experiment. We were commissioned by the Museum of Nature to do this, basically a sonic experiment where I was remixing, and it ended up turning into a live show with the singers. And it's just kind of grown from there. And I mean, it's something that, like, I've always experimented with all kinds of different things. And I really enjoy, you know, different music and trying different processes of, you know, different ways of creating. And so, you know, as we were starting up, I mean, the band started to shift, and, you know, even the equipment that I was using shifted, and our interaction started to shift. And really, I mean, what they've done is they've welcomed me into the throat singing game, which is, it's kind of a game, it's kind of a sport, it's kind of a tradition, it's all these different things. It's like a hobby, it's like a almost like a lifestyle, it's a spiritual practice, it's so many different things. And they've you know, over the years, they've just drawn me into this game, and they've allowed me to play the game with them, which is, it's been amazing. And so as it's gone along, it's shifted a lot. And the first album was a skeleton. It was, you know, it was very rudimentary. We were combining, you know, my life's work of 30 years of making beats and learning about rhythm from around the world with their life's work of reclaiming their tradition, which was almost, you know, eradicated by the church up north, because it was completely forbidden. And so Cynthia, Charlotte, and I mean, everybody knows Tanya Tagak, who's good friends with Charlotte and Cynthia. They were about to go on tour together before the pandemic hit. And so, you know, that generation, this generation, obviously Susan Iglukark and was a little bit earlier, but now there's a mass of women who are reclaiming the tradition because it almost disappeared. And so they've learned from their elders. They've gone around and learned anything anything they could from old tapes and cassettes and anything that was preserved of it, they've taken it. But now they're really, you know, I mean, it's developed in this modern context in the YouTube world and TikTok world. And so it's just accelerated the revitalization of it. And it's, so I mean, they're just escalating it and just turning into this crazy. Like when we first started, you know, other than Tanya, who was doing like, you know, long performances of throat singing, there wasn't really anyone else who's doing that. And then we kind of took it in a different direction with a kind of a trance approach to it, where we're really focusing on the rhythmic nature of Katajak, which is the name for Inuit throat singing. So, so Katajak, sometimes it would be like 30 seconds or 40 seconds, but we started doing like 3, 4, 5 minutes. Sometimes it's like 8 minutes when it's live and I'm drumming. So it's this real trance. Like we brought a New York City house music attitude to, you know, this northern ancient tradition, you know? So yeah, it's just, it's evolved. And then the equipment, like initially I was playing with my DJ tables and then we switched to loopers and then it just wasn't really working out. But then when I started playing as a percussionist with them, then it just opened everything up and we were able to, I was able to follow them more fully and to really fully, you know, immerse myself in what they were doing and try to play so that it will work for them, you know? So as opposed to, you know, the traditional thing, which is like, or what had been done in the past was, you know, singers would come in and they would drop on a beat. A producer would make a beat, they would drop on it, right? So that's one thing, but this is me tailoring the beat live to them, right? So it's I think it's a much more equal footing. It's also like, now this is kind of also an experiment in reconciliation. And, you know, I think artists have to be artists are the ones who have to lead this, and we have to show people that cultures are compatible and that we can, you know, we can deeply appreciate each other's lived experiences and come together to create something that didn't exist before, you know? So I think that was really important. And, you know, so for me, musically, I think that's what that represents, is that it's no longer, oh, like here, come in and drop on my context. It's like, no, like I'm trying to be in your context and play your game, you know? So and I think that's why people really appreciate it too, because you can kind of feel that it's really the throat singing is right there. Like it's like we're three equal parts playing together. It's not a sample, it's not like a little flavor of throat singing. It's throat singing, you know? And the beats, sometimes the beats lead, but sometimes they're subservient to it, and sometimes they follow, and they're just like, there's a deep integration between the rhythms. And then Katajak is such a rhythmic tradition that it's amazing. I mean, some of the polyrhythms that they're able to come up with, you know, it's super complex jazz basically, you know? So it works really well in the dance music context. And so, yeah, I mean, we have a lot of fun, man. Like I'm still tripping out on every time we get together. I'm like, wow, that was crazy. Sometimes it'll turn into something so unexpected, and all they have to do is just switch one little accent and all of a sudden it becomes like a completely different feeling. And then I'll switch a little something and it just grows and morphs. And then you throw in the people dancing too. Like that's just a whole other level of insanity. And just like, yeah, I love it, man. It's so fun.
Yeah, no. And I really like the idea of the improvisational aspect of it. I think that's really cool. And, you know, unfortunately at a time when it is hard to play live shows, I mean, I can definitely see how that would affect like how you guys perform, because a lot of it is like, you know, seems to be based on like the energy in the room. And like you said, if they change a single accent suddenly, you know, that changes the direction you're going, which can then change the direction they're going, and then it's almost like this freestyle.
It is kind of, it's a roller coaster ride. It's also a battle as well, right? Which was one of the cool things that for me when I first saw it, I thought like, this is like it's almost like audio b-girling, because they're battling each other too, you know? So that's a real aspect of it, is they're trying to throw each other off and they're playing in that way, which is something that's common to a lot of cultures. You know, like I play capoeira, which is a Brazilian martial art dance kind of game, really, you know? And so in capoeira, there's this thing called malandro, which is, it means like malice, but it's almost like you're being like, you're purposely showing the other person they're weaknesses in a martial way so that you can like throw them off, you know? And so they're doing that to each other all the time. And they sometimes they just bust out laughing. Most of the time at the end of the song, they just be laughing because some ridiculous thing would happen, you know? And so, and you know, I get to do that with them. They're constantly like pushing me outside of my comfort zone all the time. So like almost every song will hit a point where I crack or they crack. It's like one of us will crack, you know? So it's fun, man. It's a lot of fun.
So I sent out a crack research team, and they were able to find out you guys have a great fondness for the Coven.
Oh, that's Charlotte and Cynthia's. That's their joint. That's where they hang out.
I'm not sure if you would be able to answer this for them, but I absolutely adore the Coven. I went out of my way to get it for my birthday. I don't live anywhere near downtown, so I like went out of my way to get it for my birthday because it's just so good. Do you know what their go-to order is when they hit it up?
Oh, so we've got the black eternal, the black metal nachos. We've got the charcuterie. And that's shark, S-H-A-R-K, ootery. Okay, let me see the burgers, the extreme burgers. I think they like the dimmu. I think that's the one.
Right. Okay, cool. I think
it's that. The partly, what is it? Patty stuffed with spicy cheese. Oh, yeah. Spicy cheese grilled and hot peppers. Sauteed green peppers and onions and spicy Havarti. Oh, yeah. That's the one. Yeah, I think they like that one. It's a pretty special place. After they took me there, I had nightmares for a couple days after. Couldn't sleep. Oh yeah, it's heavy metal, baby.
You've said that performing for a live audience helped your music evolve. Has that created challenges while making your next album?
I guess this kind of ties into the first question about the evolution of the sounds. I think, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the direction of the next album, and it's almost like when we were getting started, we had this like these crazy ideas with the band, and it just kind of took off. And then the next one, it just kept going and went really out into outer space. And we had all these different guests on it and a lot of different sonic, you know, territory that we hadn't covered before. And with this one, I think it's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. It's like we went there, we saw what we could do, and now we're coming back and going back to some of the roots. And like, for example, Charlotte has some Irish roots. And so we've had a guest Boron player that's on the album. So that's kind of brought a really, really interesting Celtic flavor to some of the songs. You know, we have a lot of very organic textures in this one. I even played kit drums on some of them. And so it's a really, really interesting, a lot of very grimy, like 90s kind of hip hop sounds that are going on. And so, yeah, I think it has definitely shifted. And almost every time that we do a sound check, something will happen and we'll end up coming up with like a little idea. So, you know, whenever we're out in public, a lot of times these amazing little jams will happen, and I think that's kind of part of that evolution as well. So yeah, for sure, it's been growing and it's still continuing. I don't think it's going to ever stop, you know. And as we grow as people also, we listen to different things, and that's coming through the music. And so yeah, I often tell them like, yeah, I'm looking forward to like the 10th, 11th, 12th album and see what it's going to sound like, you know. I can't wait to hear what we're going to be doing in 20 years, you know.
Yeah, totally. Galactic, that actually goes on to my next question, which is Galactic Gala gives off a very futuristic and otherworldly sound at times, and you've gone as far as to call it alien hip hop. What inspired you to take your music in that direction and why?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the alien hip hop is kind of a funny, you know, funny tag that we like to throw around, because you know, really, if you don't know about throat singing and you first hear it, it freaks people right out. Like, they just, what in God's name am I listening to? You know, it's like, it's really next level. And then the beats I make, you know, I mean, it's not really pop. Like, it's pretty underground. You know, I've definitely got an ear tuned to, you know, the trends that are happening in music. And I've always liked futuristic stuff that just is kind of out of the box. So I think, yeah, I think it's just kind of a combination of all these different things, and it's a fun way for us to joke around about it. But there's definitely an outer space thing going on with us. I mean, it's, you know, we like to astral travel and just take people on these trips. And, you know, there's nothing really, I've never heard anything like what we do. So, you know, it trips me right out sometimes when I'm playing. And, you know, especially when you get to play for a nice festival where there's a lot of people, and it's just this whole outer space sound. Like it's these sounds of nature, you know, they're not bound by language. They're not bound by traditions. I mean, they are from the tradition, but so much of what they're doing is modern, and they're reinventing it constantly. And so, yeah, I think it's trippy, man.
Yeah. I don't think I've heard anything like what you guys are doing either. It just sounds very, very unique. And it's, this is very distinguishable. As a band with strong ties to Canada, how do you find reception differs when you play somewhere like Norway? Do the audiences there respond to the things you want them to, or do you find they're finding different meaning in your music?
Well, I think, you know, I'd love to say that everybody's stoked about what we're doing. I don't think that's the case. I mean, it's very niche. And I think for people who have, like, we have several different types of people who are into the music. Obviously, the Indigenous crowd is very supportive, and Southern Indigenous as well. I mean, and there's really, there's a lot of support within the Indigenous music community for Indigenous efforts, especially when it involves revitalizing culture and traditional aspects of culture, right? So there's that. And then there's the world music community, which is people who are just into different music from around the world, you know? And that's been a huge source of support. So like if we won the Stingray Award at the Mundial Festival in 2018. So it's a world music festival in Montreal. It's the biggest one in Canada. It's actually becoming very well known worldwide. And so, you know, they gave us an award for the best performance. It was an incredible show that we played. And also just an incredible little bar in Montreal with like way too many people in it. Like, it was like double the fire limit in there, you know, in a basement. It was just an absolutely crazy show. And it just like the show blew up, you know? So there's a lot of support from that community. And I mean, then there's just like club people. So, I mean, that's my world, right? So, I mean, for me, it's about dance music, and I make dance music. That's what I've always been in love with. It's what I've always done. And, you know, as a DJ, as a producer, it's always been my focus to get people dancing. I love to dance myself, and I just think it's such an amazing, just an amazing thing. And the more I do it, the more now, getting older, I've realized that it's a social act. Like it's activism. Like getting people to dance together is a form of activism to me. It's like, you know, I think about the sweaty, long, long nights where I would DJ the Mercury Lounge. I was a resident of the Mercury Lounge for years, starting in the 2001, you know, and, you know, I think about those nights. They would end at, you know, the lights would come on at 2:30 after people hadn't even been drinking. They couldn't sell alcohol for half an hour. And then the lights would come on and everyone wanted to go home, but none of the dancers wanted to leave. And it's just like, I remember the bar staff being like, go home, it's time to go home, like screaming at people and screaming at me, like, shut it off, you know? And everyone would be like, no, play another track, you know, just like this. And it's black, white, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, anything, everyone welcome, everyone dancing together, sweating together, breathing each other's COVID and germs and everything just all over, you know, we're covered in each other's sweat. I remember parties, dude, where like I would be playing and the sweat would be condensating, the humidity would be condensating on the ceiling and it would be dripping down. And as the vinyl was playing, I'd have to like wipe it with something because there was so much sweat coming down from everywhere. Like literally like we were in a human soup, you know? And I honestly, I can't think of any better medicine for the world right now than for people to just dance together, you know? Republican and Democrat and like, you know, everyone together, like just sweating together. That's what we're meant to do. We're meant to breathe each other's air and be with each other. And like, you know, the whole social media landscape is kind of, it's just created this sterile, hostile environment where everybody can just be so mean to each other and so inhuman with each other, you know? So to me, man, that whole dance music aspect is so key to what we do. And it's such a part of the band. And also I think it's got to be a part of reconciliation. You know, it's like everyone all around the world, every nation has a dance tradition, whether it's French Canadians, you know, Anglo-Saxons, Celtic, everybody has a dance tradition. And if we can share each other's dances together, that's like, to me, such a hopeful vision for how we can progress here and humanize and treat each other like humans, you know? So I think, so that's the other part of the band, right? Is that dance music tradition. So I think all those aspects really make the project what it is.
You've talked about Charlotte and Cynthia welcoming you into their game. and you experiencing these traditions and this culture. As a settler, what does reconciliation mean to you? And how far out of reach do you think it is at this moment?
Well, I think we're so blessed in Canada in so many different ways. And we're so blessed also, you know, for to be a country of immigration and to be a country where so many different people have brought their culture. You know, I mean, I've always grown up in very multicultural neighborhoods in Montreal. You know, I had a lot of friends from the African diaspora, whether it was West Africa, East Africa, South Africa, North Africa, you know, the Middle East. You know, I grew up with some Indian friends, Chinese friends, you know, my partner's Korean, my kids are half Korean, you know, studied Japanese martial arts, you know, South America, such a huge impact on my life from the food, the culture, Brazilian music, you know, I grew up, you know, like Brazilian music is huge in my life, Cuban music, you know, Mexican culture, you know, and then America, like where, you know, it's, you know, to me, New York being the ultimate melting pot and the ultimate, like, New York's the ultimate for me. For culture, there's no place in the world like New York, and so much of what I am, so much of who I've learned to be comes from spending time with my dance teachers in Brooklyn, and my partner and I for 10 years, we would go down there, and we would just learn from anyone we could in the house dance scene, and we would go to some of the pioneers' places, and they would take us around, they'd take us to Central Park, to parties, going out at night with them, telling us stories about The Loft, and, you know, I don't know if you know about The Loft, but David Mancuso is this crazy New York cat who had a loft, and it was like a private party, and it would happen every Friday and Saturday night. He made little membership cards, and it was where, really, the culture of house was born. And so, being exposed to that, you know, to me, my ideal in my mind has always been that we all appreciate each other's cultures, you know. Now, you know, the Indigenous experience in Canada, that's a whole other thing. And I didn't know a lot about it until about 10 years ago, until I started working with Flying Down Thunder, who's an Algonquin powwow and a round dance singer here in Ottawa. And so he really kind of opened my eyes to the Indigenous reality in Canada. And honestly, I had no idea. And I think most Canadians have no idea. And I'm not sure that everyone's ready for it, but everyone has to get ready for it, because this has to be a reckoning on a national scale, the likes of which we haven't even imagined yet. The amount of pain and suffering that has been caused these people, and the intergenerational trauma, and the constant systemic racism in all of the different facets of public life and of the system, the way that it's set up. I mean, it is absolutely astounding, and it's really fundamentally important for us, if we're going to move forward as a country, to address this profoundly. And I don't mean just pay lip service to it. I don't even mean just in the institutional sense. I mean, like, Canadians, every Canadian is going to have to do some serious soul searching and really figure out what it's going to mean to be Canadian in 20 years and 30 years and 40 years. And to me, my most hopeful vision is that we will fully, fully embody this and fully come to terms with it. And I think it has to start on a personal level with people working together and creating opportunities for each other and really deeply integrating. And I'll tell you, man, it's not easy. Like, it's not easy for Indigenous people to think about reconciliation, but it's not easy for settlers to think about it either. And it's very, very, it's a brutal, brutal history that, and it's not even a history, it's a brutal reality that continues to this day to inflict the amounts of pain that are almost inconceivable to normal settlers, you know, to people who grew up here as the majority. It's almost inconceivable the amount of how messed up it can be, you know? So I think, you know, it's going to be a really profound transformation for Canada. If we are going to continue as a country and to continue to grow, it's going to have to happen. And so, you know, I don't think people are ready, and I think they need to get ready. I think reading books about it is great. You know, I think there's so many incredible Indigenous writers that are writing about their experiences and sharing that. That's a really great way. But also, you know, if you have friends that are Indigenous, like if you know people who are, and like, for example, this powwow, it's a fantastic opportunity for everybody to take in some of the culture, you know, and just go and listen and just watch and support some of the vendors and just like, and get into it and start to learn, because this was here before the Queen, you know, this was what it was before, and it still is, you know. So I think it's super important, if you're aware of your surroundings, if you want to be tapped into what's going on in the world, then like, you need to get into this, you need to open your mind to it a little bit and learn, like, just go and learn. And you know, like, every Indigenous person I know is so welcome welcoming and so sharing with the culture, and they want to share their stories. These stories have been repressed for generations. And so, you know, I think it's a beautiful opportunity for us all, you know, to create something new, you know, to create like a real utopia eventually, you know. So, but it's going to start with a lot of pain for everybody to come to terms with this, because some of it is atrocious.
Yeah. I was talking to Twin Flames before this, and I was saying to them as well, I have older family who, when all this stuff came out about Kamloops, were like, their minds were blown. And the thing is, like, I was heartbroken, but I wasn't surprised. It was like, yeah, this checks out, unfortunately. It's one of those things where it's like, it's not just there. And until someone pays it more than lip service, like, this is a huge, not even, I wouldn't even call it a blemish or a scar, like, just this huge gash.
It's a chainsaw wound in the middle of a country.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a chainsaw wound in the middle of the country. And it's, I get it's tough to admit. I came up at a time where, when I first learned about residential schools, it was grade 10 Canadian history. And my teacher kind of just skimmed over it. And it was like, wait, go back. We did what? I'm sorry. And it wasn't, I will give my grade 11 law teacher a lot of credit, because he was the first person to basically say straight up, this is part of Canadian history. It's messed up, but you need to know this is a thing. And of course, that's very surface level introduction. But I mean,
but starts with that.
It starts with that. Exactly.
I didn't get any of it. I didn't hear the term residential school until about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago.
Well, it's funny, because for me, that was about 10, 12 years ago. So I feel maybe it's just my perspective and your perspective, but it almost feels like that's when people really started talking about it.
It is. That's when it started. You know, there's a Chinese saying, a man is more a product of his time than of his upbringing. And I think the internet, for all its the horrible things about it, it has given a platform to a lot of voices that were suppressed before. And so, you know, mm-hmm. to me, that's the most hopeful part of social media, is that it's allowing minority voices to be heard. And so I think, you know, it coincides with that 10, 15 years ago. That's when this whole, you know, this whole online social media thing started happening. And so, you know, that's the positive side of it. I mean, it's got a lot of negatives too, but thank God we can hear some of these voices, because I mean, the literal whitewash of culture for the past, you know, I mean, 500 years, like, it's just incredible. It's incredible. So, I mean, all we can do is just, like, we have to embody this. Like, we have to be stoic about it and go, okay, this is what it is. What can we do? What can we do to help? How can we be helpers? How can we be enablers? And how can we, you know, how can we move forward and create a more just, a more fair world, you know?
Yeah, totally. Last question. Is there anything you'd like to plug, and where can people find you?
Oh, silaandrise.com. You can find us. You can also just type Sila and Rise. So it's SILLAANDRISE. So Sila and Rise. And so that's our handle on social media. Facebook's a great place to connect with us. Instagram as well. And then silaandrise.com as well, if you want to check out our website. There's a little shop on there. And then you can find us on all the streaming platforms as well. And yeah, come out to a show. So Monday, we're going to be at the Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Festival, which is just an amazing, amazing festival. Hopefully next year, we'll get back to the full-on festival at Vincent Massey Park, which is a beautiful, beautiful park in Ottawa, right by the river, by the Rideau River. It's just a fantastic spot. And, you know, next year, come and enjoy the whole thing. But for this year, there are still tickets left for Monday. It's going to be in the West End off Moody Drive, Wesley Clover Parks, and it's going to be a drive-in. It's ourselves playing. The headliner is Twin Flames, who are Yayi and Chelsea. They're absolutely amazing. Kind of a blend of folk and Inuit storytelling and rock and a full band. They're really great music. Beautiful singers, both of them. They sing beautifully. and in Inuktitut, as well as in English and French sometimes. And so, yeah, just a fantastic band. They've been around for years, and they're really a little local treasure. So great to hear them. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of other programming as well. They have some kind of a drone show, I hear, with like hundreds of drones in the air. And then they've got, some other throat singers as well who are performing. So it's going to be really fun. It's just a chance to go to a drive-in with your family and come out and, you know, enjoy some real live music for a change, you know?
Thank you so much again for joining me. Once again, that was Rise Ashen of Scylla and Rise. You can check them out tonight at Wesley Clover Parks, where they're going to be performing with Twin Flames to close out the Summer Solstice Indigenous Festival. You can still buy tickets online, or you can catch a simulcast on Rogers TV tonight starting at 7. No matter how you check it out, definitely check it out, because it's going to be a great show. I'm just so excited that we're finally getting back to live music.